When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like St. Vincent de Paul and the Axley Law Firm. Joining us now, one of the candidates running for governor, Matt Flynn. He is an attorney from Milwaukee, also the former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Mr. Flynn, welcome to the show.
Good to be on the show.
Well, you've taken a very aggressive posture in this race. You've run a couple other times, including in 1986 for the United States Senate. You seem to be running a different kind of campaign, and I don't know, maybe it's my imagination, but you used to be a little more maybe cautious. This race, you seem to be running as a very progressive person.
Well, I've always been a progressive person, but when you have crooked Donald Trump in the White House and you have Scott Walker, who's really just a policy mule for a Republican donor cartel, we're not running against Lee Dreyfus and Tommy Thompson or Dwight Eisenhower. We're running against people who are subverting the democracy in the United States, and I think it's time for everybody to come out, talk plainly, and get these guys out of office.
You know, obviously, wage, not only stagnation, but wage depression has been a problem in Wisconsin for a very long time. So even as we came out of a recession, and in some industries, a depression, we didn't have the kind of rebound we normally do where wages go up. You have really focused on a plan to raise wages, which is what the problem is, right? The wages and benefits are the issue. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a focal point of the campaign. Here's the deal. Wages right now, the median wage, the real wage, right, adjusted for inflation, is lower under Walker than it was under Doyle 10 years ago. It's been frozen and slightly reduced. Why is that? Act 10, right to work and busting prevailing wage. Because when union wages are high and fair, non-union wages go up. When they go up, there's pressure to increase the minimum wage. He has simply sucked money out of this state, basically stolen the wages of the average working person to transfer them to his donors, to corporations, to bondholders, to investors and owners and so on. Now, investors and owners should make money. They should make a lot of money. But so should the people that are producing the product. And what's happened here has gone way too far. This guy, for 8 years now, has put a lid on wages. That was his orders from his donor cartel. That has got to stop. We've got to repeal Act 10, repeal right to work, put back in prevailing wage, raise the minimum wage.
You know, it's Lent. So I had never been in St. Stanislaus before. Big Catholic church on the south side of Milwaukee. So I went to Mass yesterday there, and of course I don't speak Latin, so it was a little difficult. But you know, I read the history of that church, and then the Bayview massacre, and what happened with Governor Rusk, and the rich history of workers having some leverage in this state. That wasn't a liberal or conservative or a Republican or a Democratic issue. That was just a issue of building middle class.
Well, it was. And listen, in the 19th century when that happened, and this is a governor who had a county named after him, they murdered workers who were on strike. And the people don't remember. In the old days, they'd hire Pinkertons to shoot strikers. And it took a lot of violence and it took a lot of work to achieve the labor laws under Franklin Roosevelt that have really launched America. Because without the labor movement, there is no middle class in this country. If you go to many foreign countries, there's nothing but wealthy people and poor people who are trying to break into the wealthy people's homes. The biggest insulator for everybody is a strong middle class where everybody can make some money, have a decent standard of living. And so Milwaukee, and frankly, the Catholic Church in Milwaukee has been a staunch ally of labor in standing up to those early attacks by people. And I just there is a lot of history here, so I'm glad you were over here. But we need that spirit back. I mean,
well, you know, look, I was born there. I had relatives that worked at A. O. Smith and
oh, yeah.
Laddish, and you know, so
yeah.
it's where I come from, and you know, so I always consider Milwaukee my hometown, even though I've lived in Madison most of my life. But the labor movement in Madison, you know, after Act 10, that was very edifying to see people rise up, and yet it got crushed. Do you think it can come back?
Well, it has to come back. And let me tell you this. Whoever's elected governor now, a Democrat, I hope it's me, but I'll support any nominee against Walker, has got to be the Fighting Bob LaFollette of this coming century, because 100 years ago, Fighting Bob cleaned up the mess from the 19th century. And if we don't repeal Act 10, first of all, the teacher union and teachers are demoralized. People have been encouraged to attack them, to vilify them, drive their wages down. These are our teachers. I mean, it's time to restore the dignity of the teaching profession, and that means collective bargaining and letting them get decent wages. But it's also right-to-work, Sly. It's also a prevailing wage. When I've talked to construction workers, when I've talked to machinists, carpenters, everybody, the prevailing wage thing is killing people, because some of these employers in the construction companies like unions, because unions train workers and get rid of people during probationary periods who aren't going to work out. So they cooperate them anyway, but they can't pay them prevailing wage. We have got to undo every labor attack that Scott Walker's put in 8 years.
Would you do it all in one fell swoop? I've heard some candidates being rather passive on this issue, saying, well, if a bill gets to my desk, if, you know, but
right.
But there isn't going to, you know, that doesn't seem like a way to explain to the people of Wisconsin why labor and unions are important.
Right. That's baloney. Yeah, right. There's one school of thought, especially among one candidate, is you ask any, by golly, we got to start looking at that. What about right to work? By golly, we've got to start looking at that. Sly, the barbarians are at the gate. It's not by golly, we got to start looking at that. By golly, we got to start attacking them. And so, no, right to work and Act 10 are only going to be repealed with a strong governor who makes that a central point of his administration. And to say, when it comes to my desk, it's never going to come to his desk unless somebody gets it to his desk with good hard work. And I will do this. I will use the executive order. If I have a Republican legislature who screws around with me, I'm going to use executive order. I'm going to use the veto power. And you know my ideas for pardoning marijuana. I'm going to use the pardon power. They can't take any of that away from me. And I will keep ramming it to them until we get a Democratic legislature in there.
What else would you like to do as far as raising wages in Wisconsin? Does that include raising the minimum wage?
It does. It absolutely includes raising the minimum wage. And I set a target. It's on my website, forwardwithflynn.com. Look at our platform, of $15 an hour. And that's something, you know, there'll be pushback and there'll be negotiation. But that's my goal. And I'll tell you why. Do you know that right now, adjusted for inflation, the minimum wage is about $3 an hour less than it was in 1968? In 1968, adjusted for inflation, the minimum wage is over $10 an hour. So we have done nothing but let it diminish through atrophy, through inflation, and through no cost of living. So that, at a minimum, people need. But you can't. You go up north of Highway 29. You go in a lot of rural areas. You go in the inner city of Milwaukee. People are either not working or they're working part-time jobs, two part-time jobs, $8, $9 an hour, and they used to work for $25 an hour. This next governor has got to be the wage governor, and I want to be that governor.
You know, one of the things that's really kind of happened in the state that you can begin to see a change is that because of this loosening of environmental standards, people that make their living in the hospitality and tourism industry are beginning to get hurt as well. We shouldn't forget about them.
Right. We used to be known for honest government, clean water, and high wages. Now we're known for dirty government, dishonest government, dirty water, and low wages. And on the water business, there was the sports editor of one of the papers up around Eagle River who started to go after Walker because of this wetlands bill. The point is, what he has done is dirtied our water. You know, in Kewaunee County, about half the wells, you can't drink out of them, and those CAFOs are going all over the state. But in addition, he's dismantling the DNR. He took climate change off of the website, and he is letting industry write their own permits with their own experts that are going to be permanent and don't have to take into account the effect on neighboring lakes and streams. He is single-handedly dirtying the water of the state of Aldo Leopold, John Muir, and Gaylord Nelson. And we can't tolerate that.
Did you see
what... independent DNR, independent chair, and reverse every dirty water provision he's put in.
Did you see what Senator Ron Johnson said about the lead and some of the chemicals in the water in Kewaunee County? He said, let the free market fix it.
Ron Johnson is a shill. It's a tragedy that Russ didn't beat him. He is nothing but another mule for his donor cartel. The free market, the reason that Franklin Roosevelt and all the initiatives of the Democratic Party for the last 70 years have built modern America, in the free market, you'd end up like an Asian, African, or South American country where you have wealthy people in compounds with barbed wire and poor people trying to break in and no middle class. That is what happens when you let the free market. You want an enlightened market that is subject to some regulations, or poor people will eat poisoned meat, they'll drink poisoned water. You need the free market he's talking about is a market that the donor cartel wants him to say.
Why do you think that Scott Walker's been able to survive as long as he has, other than money? Obviously, money's a big part of it. It's probably at the top of the equation. But what else has kept him in office?
Well, first of all, he's unusual for a Republican leader, because he doesn't steal for his own account. You take a look at Trump, professional thief who steals money for himself. What Walker does is he truly does not get money for himself. He has this almost ascetic dedication to letting his donors steal the public assets of the state. So people are momentarily hoodwinked by it. The second thing, though, is I have never seen a more disciplined individual, and I've been on radio shows with him. I've never seen him express a human emotion. Joy, sorrow, fear, anger, gladness, anything. There is this robotic countenance that never deviates from message, and he pulls it out with 51 or 2%. He's not doing that this time.
Why did you decide to run this time?
You know, I decided to run. I was the chairman of this party for two terms. I'm a Navy veteran, the only veteran in the race. And, you know, when I look back and I saw politics, it was in a happier time. Our democracy is under assault. In Washington, crooked Donald Trump is really, he's the draft-dodging servant of Vladimir Putin, who's a murderer and a lifelong communist and a guy who was with the KGB. And he's letting him into the government. He's letting him into the White House. He's letting him into the Republican Party. I'm going to clean that out in this state. And Walker has done nothing but systematically, slowly destroy the state for his donors. I think it's a patriotic duty. I'm glad there's so many people running. They all have the duty to run. And whoever wins, and I think, I'm hoping I do, I'm looking pretty good, and I think I will win, I'm going to take him on.
We'll take a break. This is SlysOffice.com. We're talking to Matt Flynn, who's one of the candidates running for governor. He's an attorney from Milwaukee. SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
We're back with Matt Flynn, SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, also Madison Firefighters Local 311. Madison Teachers Incorporated, and the Teamsters, Local 695. Matt, what separates you? You mentioned that you were a veteran, that you were chair of the party. What do you think else separates you from the other candidates running?
I think it's three things. First of all, when I go around the state, I am the only veteran in this race, and I get up in Jackson County, Clark County, I get up in Douglas County or anywhere else, and I simply asked for a shout-out for my fellow veterans. And I think people are ready for a stronger message from the Democratic Party than they got this last time around. The second thing is I was the party chair. And you have people who are no labels, people who attack the party, people who are, think that the party is wrong. When you look at Matt Flynn, you get the party. You get the chairman of the Democratic Party. That's what you get. And there's no equivocation. There's no backing down. And the third thing is for many, many years, I have practiced law in addition to my political career, and I'm very used to arguing to juries, arguing to judges, arguing to appellate courts, and making the case. And the question in this this race, Sly, is who is, by training and ability, most able to prosecute the case against Scott Walker. Scott Walker is on trial, and I think I can prosecute it better than the others.
Let me ask you a little bit about Donald Trump obviously was able to pick up some votes of people that had either voted for Barack Obama or maybe Bill Clinton at one time. The trade issue has been central. And there's been two schools of thought. There's Ron Kind and LaCrosse, who is an open advocate of free trade. That's becoming kind of rare in the Democratic Party. But Democratic presidents have gone along with it in most part. Russ Feingold, Tammy Baldwin, Mark Pocan, Tom Barrett when he was in Congress, Jerry Klitschko when he was in Congress, they really felt as though it harmed the state. Now we have the steel tariffs. Give me your thought on this.
Right. Let me. I do not trust what Trump is doing. If I thought that would help the steel workers and the unions, I might have a different point of view. But when somebody like Trump, who hates unions, is for right to work and is against prevailing wage, says, "I want to help unions," I know very well what he's doing is helping himself. He has three objectives in this. One is to get money for himself. Two is to please Putin. And three is to divert attention from the Russia investigation. Now, on the first thing, he won't give us his tax returns, so I don't know what stocks he's buying and shorting. But I can tell you that Putin would be delighted to see us in a fight with Brazil and China. Brazil's our ally over steel. The other thing is he shot his mouth off out in Pennsylvania in an endangered Republican congressional seat, and there's no detail in this. I mean, there's no comprehensive plan. It is essential to stand up, for instance, to the Chinese, who steal IT all the time, who cheat all the time. We've got to crack down on them. But when you set up a reciprocal trade war, all you can do by trying to help one sector is to hurt brewery workers who make Miller beer that goes in aluminum cans, or Harley-Davidson sales. I mean, Harley-Davidson is one of our greatest companies. People actually tattoo its logo on their skin. No other company, but
shouldn't Harley-Davidson buy their steel from America?
Well, yes, and absolutely, and I encourage Buy American. But in this particular market, there what economists would call externalities to any action you take. And so right now, my objective, and mind you, the governor of Wisconsin has no trade authority other than to lead trade missions. But my approach to it is very, very simple, and that is, what is the best for the greatest number of union workers in this country? And I will do that. And so in this particular case, if he wants to make the case to me for tariffs, great, but don't shoot it off at a right off the top of your head somewhere when this thing isn't thought out and the externalities aren't thought out.
The paper industry. The United Steelworkers also represent a lot of paper workers in Wisconsin.
Right.
Scott Walker's spending billions of dollars on Foxconn. Democrats have proposed a paper fund to help some of these plants upgrade to brown paper because the paper industry is changing. There is opportunity. Scott Walker wants to give a broader tax cut to Kimberly-Clark. What would be your approach in this situation?
I think we have got to stop this whole business of the state, in effect, subsidizing every business in the state. Everybody's going to line up with their hands out. That Foxconn deal is a crooked deal, $4.5 billion given to this Chinese company, who on mainland China, they're Taiwanese, but they do their business in mainland China. They're under investigation there for securities fraud and violating their own flimsy communist laws, and we bring them in for $4.5 billion. Immediately, everybody has his hands out. Immediately, everybody in the state wants 17% of their payroll. How are the taxpayers of the state supposed to repair our roads, fund public education, and pay 17% of the payroll of every company in the state? I'd go the other way. You want to come to the state, I'm going to give you clean water and good public education and great workers. You make your own profit. I'm not going to pay you to make a profit. That's my view.
Again, with the paper industry, they've complained about China dumping paper onto the market. So free trade has damaged that industry. Do you think those paper jobs are important?
Not only are they important, I agree with them in that sector. The Chinese have cheated on trade the entire time they've been a modern country. In fact, if you look over their history of, 5,000 years, it's an unusual society that sort of sustains itself it doesn't translate into modern business practices. So what I would do is I would absolutely, they don't just cheat on paper. They cheat on automobiles and motorcycles. They cheat on everything. That's inherent in their cultural philosophy of business relations. So it would be very simple. What I would say to them is, if you put up fake barriers to entry to our goods over there, we're going to shut you down. You give a fake, and this is true in India too, you give a fake surcharge of some sort on Harley bikes, we're not going to permit your bikes over here. We are stronger than they are right now. We should stay ascendant. We're the greatest country that's ever existed, and I believe in American ascendancy. And we have let them get away with murder, and that's happened over several administrations. It's happened Republican and Democratic. But I'm running for governor. No one's asking me to negotiate with the Chinese for very good reason, because if I did, it would be very simple. We're in charge. And you want to ship your stuff over here, we are shipping our stuff to you. And if there is a penny of a crooked tariff put on, or a lot of times they describe it as a fee or some weird thing or a cultural preference, you pull any of that, and good luck, Jack. You're not doing business here.
Let me ask you about marijuana. You've broken the norm of staying a million miles away from that issue. Give me your perspective on this. You know, you're not 25. you're a veteran. You've been around politics for a very long time. You've obviously seen a sea change on this issue. Give me your perspective on this.
Yeah, well, as you point out, as I get in, I will pardon everybody in a Wisconsin jail or prison or even on probation. I'll pardon them who is there for possession of marijuana. I'm not, no violence, no gang activity, but I mean possession. There are a lot of them. And what persuaded me was there was a kid that I bumped into. He came up to me and he said, Mr. Flynn, my father just got out of jail after 20 years. And I said, and he can't get a job. And I said, what did he do? And it was a very low-level crime, something like stealing a car with no violence and no owner there. So how the heck did he get 20 years? Well, Mr. Flynn, he had 3 felony convictions for marijuana possession before that. In other words, two possessions is one felony. So 6 times he possessed, a small amount of marijuana. That ruined the man's life. He lost his family, his wife, his son, and he can't find a job. That's not happening under me. Mass incarceration is wrong. We're spending more on prisons than we are on the University of Wisconsin. That's wrong. And I'm going to have a pardon board that you've never seen before in this state that's going to review many, many convictions for nonviolent offenses.
Well, this governor won't pardon anyone.
Well, this governor has no mercy whatsoever. He has no sense of proportion, right? So it's mass incarceration. It's also personal freedom on marijuana. If you can smoke and use marijuana in Colorado and California, but it can be a felony in this state with 2 possessions, that's not right. I mean, that's not America. And you get all sorts of chicanery and hiding stuff and sneaking around. You have drug cartels and you have murder and you have opium laced into it and all this. That's going to stop with me. I tell you, that's what will stop with me. I will legalize it for all purposes, regulate tax only for people over 21. You know, you don't have gummy bears and candy stores with it, none of that kind of stuff. Regulate it like alcohol. And we're going to get it done. And our jails are going to have a heck of a lot fewer people in them than they do right now.
Right now, here's what I hear from criminal defense attorneys. We have a problem where somebody gets busted for marijuana. They don't go to prison or to jail, but usually terms of their probation is that they, if they test positive, then they do. So sometimes it's the second count that begins to become draconian. You say legalize it, pardon the people that have been busted for possession. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely right, because marijuana stays in your system for about 7 days. So, and you're not impaired driving at that time. But what I will say this to the cowboy judges and prosecutors who are Republicans in the state, and I'm saying this on your show right now, who think it's funny and it's great to be tough on crime and put people away for possession. If you convict them at 10 in the morning, I'll pardon them at 2 in the afternoon. Do not waste my time. Do not waste your own time. I'm not putting up with this anymore, and I will decree that there be no more marijuana prosecutions, because if there are, you're simply wasting everybody's time. They're getting pardoned.
So as far as the state goes and the whole issue of marijuana and the drinking age and everything else, do you think adulthood starts at 18? You know, when the state lowered the drinking age or raised the drinking age to 21, first to 19, then to 21, and we're putting the laws in on marijuana, a lot of states are saying 21. What is adulthood?
Well, you know, I know some 50-year-olds who are not adults, and I know some 17-year-olds who are adults. So that's a philosoph- that's it for Aristotle and Plato to answer that one. But
you are the first gubernatorial candidate I've talked to bring up Aristotle and Plato.
But what I will tell you is this: you got to start somewhere, and it's going to be much more palatable politically to say for people over 21. Look, you and I know there's nobody listening to the show right now that didn't have a beer when he was in high school because his older brother got it from us. I know that. That kind of thing happens. But when you limit it by age, you do limit abuse of it. You limit large-scale use of it, and that's useful. You got to start somewhere. I'll start at 21. If people think that it should be lower than that, and I remember the right to vote, you know, during the Vietnam era, it was lowered to 18 because guys were getting drafted, going to Vietnam, getting killed, and they couldn't vote about it, and that's wrong. But I started 21, and I'm reasonable. We'll listen to it, but you got to start somewhere.
Let me ask you about road funding. This governor has really, really dropped the ball on the infrastructure and road building. How do we pay for fixing that problem? It's not going to come free.
No. You know what he's done is he simply borrowed and neglected. And the borrowing debt service, i.e. interest payments on bonds right now, is more than 20 cents. Of every dollar we raise, 20 cents of it goes to pay for or more interest on past borrowing. You can't sustain that. It used to be about 5%. So I would do this. I would reindex the gas tax. They stopped reindexing about 12 years ago to simply look like they were tax cutters. But all they did was destroy the roads, among the worst in the country. So Senator Janet Buley up north had a very good idea I kind of liked, and I want to study it more. But what she said is, Matt, what we could do is partial reindexing. And so what you do is when gas prices are low or under control, it can be full reindexing. And that just means the cost of living. But if they get super high, if there's an embargo, if there's some trouble, you can lower the index a little so that the impact at the pump on the average consumer is somewhat restrained. I like that. The other thing I like, I rule out tolls. I don't like tolls, but
I agree with you there.
A fee on trucking companies. I mean, the physics of it are if a truck and a car go down the same road, the truck does a lot more damage, but they pay the same gas tax. And so I think that a tax on trucking companies that's then passed on to consumers, of course, is the cost of goods, as to be expected. But if you do that, we're going to pay as we go, and our borrowing is going to be very low, as it was historically when I'm governor.
Let me ask you one final question. I think I'm going to ask this to everyone that I interview. In your lifetime, who do you think the best governor of Wisconsin has been?
I think that without doubt, the best governor in my lifetime and since Fighting Bob is Governor Pat Lucey. Governor Pat Lucey was one of the two smartest men I've ever met in politics. The other was Bill Clinton. These two guys were smarter than anybody I've met in politics. Pat Lucey had just an encyclopedic grasp of policy. He had a good heart. He was very quiet. He built modern Wisconsin. Fighting Bob built honest Wisconsin. Pat Lucey took that and built modern Wisconsin.
Matt Flynn, people want to go to your website. Where do they go?
ForwardWithFlynn.com. Right. ForwardWithFlynn.com.
All right, Matt.
Go to our Facebook, too, and Twitter, too.
And thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Sly.
This is SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.